pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
And strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And it's time once again for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Thanks for being here once again. We have a lot to cover in this edition of the podcast. Remember, no podcast tomorrow with day baseball. Thursday, a 9:30 ball game. So we'll skip a day and be back at you on Friday for Felix Day. So we'll be celebrating that. And we'll see if the Mariners have a couple of wins under their belts when we get there on Friday as well. They went down last night. We'll detail that in a moment. Also coming up, Shannon Dreher put together a nice piece on Nelson Cruz as his torrid, ridiculous start continued last night. That comes up. Also, Rick Riz sits down with longtime Mariners trainer Rick Griffin, gives a little inside look and behind-the-scenes look on what that's like. But before we get to the ballgame last night, let's take a look at a move that was made as the Mariners trade away Yoervis Medina out of the bullpen and they land a catcher. They land Wellington Castillo from the Chicago Cubs. He was one of three catchers on the roster. The Cubs had traded for Miguel Montero from the Diamondbacks during the offseason. They also have David Ross back there as well. So three catchers on the roster, and the Mariners land Castillo. He was the Cubs' starting catcher just a year ago. Actually spent 2013, 2014, the bulk of those years starting. 113 games in 2013, 110 games last year for the Cubs. This year, just 24 games. Again, three catchers on the roster. It's hard to split up games with three different catchers. He was not the starter, only 43 at-bats this season so far, batting 163 with a couple of home runs. But last year in 2014, 13 dingers, 46 ribbies, batted 237. The year before that in 2013, batted 274, 8 homers, 32 RBIs. 28 years old, right-handed hitter, and should be able to spell Mike Zunino on a little more regular basis. Mike Zunino has not been able to get much time off this year. In fact, he coming into the game last night, he was tied with Salvador Perez from the Royals for most games behind home plate this year at 35. He'd appeared in 35 of the 37 games for the M's. Sucre had started six games, but Zunino found his way in four of them because of mostly pinch hitting late in innings. Games have been so close. I mean, seemingly every single game has been close this year for the M's. So Mike Zunino has found his way in all but two games so far. And you know they like to lift that workload just a little bit. That's a lot of heavy lifting from behind home plate. Something I thought was kind of interesting too, I was looking at the numbers for Mike Zunino after a non-start. And again, this is such a small sample size, this may be total coincidence, but I thought it was fairly interesting. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if I recall correctly, he didn't start in six games, so Sucre started six times. Mike Zunino, in the game after Sucre got a start, whether he appeared or not in the ballgame, the immediate game after Sucre started, Mike Zunino is batting .368 with three homers and six RBIs. Again, small sample set, but I don't think it's a bad idea to try and get him a little more breather from time to time as we move through the season. And Castillo, a veteran, he's been around, can provide a little bit of pop as well. It looks like he has the skill set to be able to do it. Maybe giving up a little defensively compared to Sucre. We'll see. On the pitch framing metrics that we talk about on the podcast from time to time, I think we should revisit that discussion. We haven't talked about that in a while. But Mike Zunino, of course, he is outstanding on those metrics. One of the best framers in the game. Castillo, not as high and not close to Zunino in terms of framing ability. But he does get credit for blocking. And so we'll see. We'll see what his skill set looks like when he gets here, when he gets into his Mariners uniform. But here are the thoughts. First, we'll go with the general manager, Jack Zarenczyk, his thoughts on making this move.
I think if you look at the state of catching throughout baseball, And I think if you look at us having two young catchers at the big league level and you know, the other 40-man roster catcher in AAA has never played a day in the big leagues. So I think when you go through the course of a, you know, 162 games, that it's such a demanding position that when you get a chance to add a veteran guy, someone that's been around, our scouts liked him, our analytic department liked him, we thought it was a good fit. You know, we hate to give up Yorvis. You know, he's a guy that you always, you know, think that can become pretty good. Did some nice things for us. But quite frankly, given the state of catching throughout baseball, you know, we just thought it was time to make a move to shore up that position. I think you look around baseball, there's like seven teams that have starting catchers not playing right now through injuries. And then you look at other clubs that are, you know, their starting catchers are, you know, you make an argument whether they're legitimate everyday guys. Mm-hmm. So by adding a guy that we think fits the criteria we just talked about, we thought it was the thing to do.
Did they pick up the phone and say this guy's available?
We had conversations for quite a while, off and on, about different subjects, which you have with all general managers. And probably about 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago, I touched base with him, and he called me back yesterday and so they were prepared to do it. They were still sifting through it, but having three catchers at the big league level, you know, you kind of figured that there was going to be a point in time when someone was going to be expendable. And if it was the guy that we were interested in, then dialogue would continue. So he called yesterday morning, and we sift through it throughout the day and made the call last night.
They seem to like your relievers. That's two now.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, you know, it's funny. You look at the last, complete year, you know, on some of the guys that we've traded. So I think that's a real credit to the organization. It's a real credit to Tom McNamara and the development staff on the guys they brought in, our international department. So we seem to have done a nice job over the years with relievers. And, you know, like I said, we like Yorvis quite a bit. Unfortunately, you know, so you have to get something, you have to give something up, and that was the price we paid this time.
What about the rest of your depth at reliever? We know Leon's down, mm-hmm. but beyond that, if something was, do you have more?
I do think there's some guys that are starting that if in a pinch, you know, the question is whether or not they're legitimate major league starters or whether or not they're guys that can go to the bullpen and help you. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see. You know, we'll see how it unfolds as time goes on, but we're always, you know, our area's open, and there's always right around the corner where something else could happen that could aid an area that of need for us if that would arise. But, you know, we feel pretty good about where we're at right now. Let's have a good series, a good road trip.
Again, that was Jack Cirencik who pulled the trigger on the deal. And what about the skipper, Lloyd McClendon? What are the expectations? He makes it pretty clear, too, who the starter is.
It's a pretty darn good baseball game. You know, to think, you know, how physical and tough catching is, and the number of catches that have gone down this year. If something would have happened to Zunino, I'm not sure we had the depth in a minor league system that would be ready to perform at this level. So we think it's something that's going to be real good for this organization. And as we speak now, you know, he'll back up Zunino when he gets here.
Is he a guy that perhaps needs to play a little bit more because of the experience he has, or is...
I guess the best way to answer that is his playing time would be predicated on Zunino's performance on the field. I mean, we're not fooling anybody here. Mike Zunino is an everyday catcher.
You had to give up an arm, a productive arm, from your kind of your core of relievers. I mean, I know obviously he's not here with you, but I mean, does that hurt you guys depth-wise there? You've added your catching depth, but how much does that hurt you depth-wise? Because
I don't think we'd have made this trade if we didn't think we had depth with right-handed relievers, particularly right-handed relievers that we believe are not going to be setup type of guys or closers. So I think we feel comfortable about the number of arms we have down there to cover that spot.
So Jesus Sucre has been sent down. Castillo in Baltimore today. He'll be ready to go if needed today. An interesting side note, I think, about this is the Mariners have done a tremendous job with developing bullpen arms. And it's been interesting to see them plug some other holes in other areas using some of the excess arms. We've seen it, you know, with Carter Capps going to the Marlins. You've got your starting first baseman out of the deal with Logan Morrison. We've seen it with Brandon Maurer going to the San Diego Padres, and essentially You've landed a starting outfielder with Seth Smith out of the deal, and now you trade Yoervis Medina, and you get a backup catcher as a position player out of the deal. Also last year, Stephen Pryor going to the Minnesota Twins and getting Kendrys Morales. So they just continue. They have a real knack for finding great bullpen arms because they're still pretty deep there. You still have Leon in AAA as well. And as Jack Cerenzik alluded to, a couple of other guys they could go to if need be. But it's been pretty interesting to see that develop, is spinning off some bullpen arms to find the necessary position player pieces. So now let's get to the ball game last night as the Mariners taking on Baltimore for the first of a three-game series, nine-game road trip. And boy, things could not have started any better for the Mariners.
The 1-2 to Smith, swinging a well-hit ball deep to right field, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Right over the top of the out-of-town scoreboard, that tall wall in right field. Seth Smith with a leadoff home run. And just like that, the Mariners take an early 1-0 lead here in the first.
1-0 lead early on. Seth Smith doing it offensively, doing it defensively.
The pitch, swing and a high fly ball, deep left field. Smith going back to the warning track, to the wall, back up against the wall, leaps up, and he makes the catch. Holy smoke, Seth Smith. Timing that leap high in the air at the top of the wall in straightaway left field. Holy smokes, that was mighty close. Jones flies out. Nice catch by Seth Smith.
Yeah, great grab there, but Baltimore does get one in the bottom of the first, so it's 1-1. Moving to the third inning, two runners on. Nice piece of hitting by Robinson Cano to reach. So two on for Nelson Cruz returning back to Baltimore.
Breaking ball hammered deep left center field. Adam Jones is going to watch it. Get out of here! Three-run jack by Nelson Cruz, and the Mariners have a 4-1 lead. Hey now.
Welcome home, Nelly.
It just continues for Nelson Cruz. The numbers are just ridiculous right now. His sizzling start continues. Shannon Dreher has a nice feature on Nelson Cruz coming up in just a few minutes where his teammates gush over Nelson Cruz for good reason. 16 home runs. That leads Major League Baseball. He's driven in 33 now, batting .347. His on-base percentage over .400. His slugging over .700. His OPS 1.118. Nelson Cruz has been unbelievable, and it just continues. It's kind of funny, though. You would expect, you know, Nelson Cruz spending last year in Baltimore, you would have expected his numbers in Baltimore, in that ballpark, for that kind of hitter to just be extraordinary. But it's funny how much better he was on the road as opposed to at home in Baltimore last season at Camden Yards. Last year at Camden Yards, batted .252, 15 home runs and 18 doubles, drove in 40 runs. Pretty good. But away from Camden Yards last year, he batted .289 compared to .252. He hit 25 home runs compared to 15. He drove in 68 compared to 40 and had 14 doubles, had 18 doubles at home. That is unbelievable. It's just not what you expect him spending half his season in Camden Yards last year. And he returns to Baltimore and lands a big blow as the Mariners a 4-1 lead at that point. Taijuan Walker able to get through a clean inning in the bottom of that frame as well. And we go to the fourth, but then the wheels fell off for Taijuan Walker, and Baltimore able to tie it in the fourth inning. Walker gets chased. He lasts 3 2/3, gives up 7 hits, 4 runs, all 4 earned. He walked 4 and struck out 3 on 71 pitches. Just didn't quite have his command. Here he was after the ball game talking about his start.
The velocity was down again. Could you feel like it was down coming out of your hand?
Some pitches, I think maybe the first 3 innings, but, I feel like in the 4th inning kind of got going again, but, maybe it was kind of too late.
Have you looked at, it's a couple times where that's happened where it's been 91. Have you looked at anything mechanically or what's going on with that?
I don't know, It's weird, I feel really good some games, and even when I do feel good, maybe those out there, I don't know.
So this has happened before this year? You've had outings where you've gone out?
Yeah.
It's been
92-ish? Yeah, it's happened before. Last year happened a couple times last year.
So a lot of the talk there on velocity, command an issue as well, obviously, but the velocity is pretty interesting. His last time out against San Diego, he went six innings. It was a good start, gave up just two runs and punched out six along the way. And you compare the two, you compare the start last night against Baltimore, the start before that against San Diego, and it does pop out when you examine the velocity. Last night, he was sitting 93.5 miles per hour. He reached 96. That was his max. And he threw 51 fastballs along the way. Against the Padres, he was really pumping them in. Threw 77 fastballs. He was sitting at 95.5 miles per hour. That's 2 miles an hour above where he was last night. His max was 97.7, so nearly 98 miles per hour. Again, nearly 2 miles per hour higher on his max as well. So, you know, that's pretty significant from one start to another in terms of velocity. But we've seen it. Taiwan Walker alluded to it. It's happened to him a couple of times this year where his velocity's been a little bit low. Loy McClendon, after the game, talked about it as well, kind of what he thought about the velocity and Taiwan Walker.
Yeah, his command wasn't there. I mean, he struggled with his velocity as well. Seemed to get it with the bases loaded, but it just wasn't there. It was certainly was not one of his best outings. It was unfortunate because we scored some runs and, you know, trying to add on. It's a tough outing.
We've seen at least another outing, maybe two, where that velocity hasn't been there. Is there something consistent when he doesn't have it?
You know, I think more than anything, he's probably just trying to find the strike zone. It's unfortunate. He's got to learn to compete, get after it, and just rely on your stuff a little bit more.
How much of the decision to take him out there was just the pitch count versus wanting him to keep, you know, fighting through and getting some of that experience?
Well, I think a lot of things come into play. Pitch count, the fact that he had gotten into the trouble. It didn't seem like he was going to get out of the trouble. We were trying to keep that game right where it is. And actually, Danny did a nice job getting us out of that inning. He gave us another clean inning and just couldn't get through that third inning.
You've mentioned ups and downs with your young pitchers and expecting them, but we've kind of seen this one before. You just mentioned that he's kind of done. He's got to learn how to do that. How much of a concern is it that he be able to get himself out of trouble when he doesn't have his best stuff?
Well, it is a concern, but I think, you know, when you talk about growing pains and a young pitcher getting better, there's going to be some failure, and that's the only way you're going to gain that knowledge and get better. And I've said this before, you know, with a young pitcher like Taiwan, there's going to be five starts. There's going to be two bad ones, and one is just going to be okay, and two that are going to dazzle you, and you're going to say, wow, you know. But we have to show patience, continue to teach him, continue to help him grow, and prod him in any way we can to make him better.
Yeah, and at that point in the ball game, he gets chased, but still the game's tied 4-4, but the Mariners' 4-1 lead was wiped away. But their lead and the game wiped away completely as Baltimore opened it up, starting in the sixth inning.
Farquhar deals, pitch swung on, hit down the right field line. This could be trouble. That is a fair ball. Coming around third and scoring is Diazza. Cruz digs it out, throws to the cutoff man Cano. And in with an RBI double, Caleb Joseph in Baltimore's got a 5-4 lead here in the sixth inning.
And they kept on churning. 9 runs on the board when it was all said and done. The O's take game one of the series 9-4, 13 hits along the way. Farquhar tagged with the loss. He falls to 0-2 after, you know, getting out of trouble, pitching a clean inning, but then he gets stuck for 3 earned runs after that. Lowe comes in, gives up 2 runs, but none earned, and Bimal closes it out. But the Mariners fall in game one of the series. They look to bounce back today. So 4:05 first pitch from Baltimore. Roenis Elias on the mound. 0-1, 3.24 ERA. He has been excellent so far. Wei-In Chen will pitch for Baltimore. Another crafty lefty. 1-2, a 2.53 ERA. So a couple lefties going at it. 4:05, first pitch. The Mariners look to get even in the series. Then they'll have a shot at trying to take the series on Thursday. Remember, Thursday, 9:35, first pitch from Baltimore. J-Hap on the hill. and scheduled to face Chris Tillman, who has struggled 2-5, a 6.34 ERA. Mariners try and keep his struggles going. So that gets you ready for the rest of the series. And, of course, we'll be back with you on Friday. Get you ready for Felix Day in Toronto, International Felix Day, which is always a good time. So right now, in honor of Nelson Cruz and his tremendous start, here is Shannon Dreyer talking about Nelson Cruz with several of his teammates.
Nelson Cruz making his return to Baltimore tonight. You've got to believe they missed this.
Pitch by Gregerson, swinging a high drive deep to left field. This one's going to the locomotive, and it hits the train. Onto the track, it hit the train out in left center field. Holy smokes, what a shot by Nelson Cruz.
Mike Zunino and the rest of his teammates are thrilled to have Cruz in a Mariners uniform.
Oh, I mean, I think he's brought energy and I mean, just love professionalism. I mean, he comes in here, he's working hard every day. And then when the game starts, I mean, he has professional at-bats, and he's the staple in the middle of the order. But, I mean, he has a lot of fun. He keeps everything loose, and I think that's, I mean, a nice energy to have in a clubhouse.
Kyle Seager has a front row for each of Cruz's at-bats and studies what he does at the plate.
He's very simple. His approach is very simple. It's tailored to exactly to, you know, what he's trying to do. His, you know, his body type, everything. It's something that, you know, didn't just happen. He's, you know, he's put thought into it, and it's repeatable. Being cool hitting behind him is, you know, you got a front row seat. So, I mean, I'm close to the action when he's hitting, so it's pretty cool.
Mike Zunino, being right-handed, can learn even more.
Yeah, I mean, when you see a right-handed bat like his and how he, I mean, swings and stuff like that, you can see some similarities. And just to see how he draws, at-bats and what he takes from certain at-bats has been really cool and something that I can trying to take and implement in my game.
Have you had conversations about hitting with him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, whether it's approach or whether what he's looking for, what he's trying to do in certain situations. I mean, I just try to, I mean, pick his brain for as much as I can because, I mean, he's so smart when it comes to that.
Here's the set. And the 3-2 on the way to Cruz. Swing and a line drive into left center field. And this one is on the track all the way to the wall. Here comes Miller rounding third. He will score! Nelson Cruz with his second walk-off hit. Mariners win it. 2-1 over the Red Sox here in the bottom of the ninth inning. Nelly Cruz being carried off the field by Logan Morrison, mobbed by his teammates behind the bag at first base. He did it again.
It just brings a calmness, I guess, to the team where it's like the other night when he was up with a runner on second, I was like, and they weren't going to walk him. Like, well, we won. It's just, and that's a really good pitcher on the mound. So to feel like that about your teammates, really cool.
As good as he's been at the plate, his teammates can't say enough about Nelson Cruz off the field.
You know, you see how he is every day in the clubhouse with his family, with his kids. He's a great dude, and he's as good of a baseball player as he is. He's even a better person, and definitely a role model for me. So
I didn't know what kind of a, you know, how good a person he is. You know, that's something that, you know, you play against guys, you know. Usually when you're talking to somebody at third base, they're going to be a little happier because they're on base. But, you know, he's been awesome. You know, just a phenomenal guy. Just a great teammate.
Yeah, I think the number one thing for me is how good of a teammate he is. You know, it's all I've ever heard, guys that played with him in Texas. But he's just genuine. You know, I mean, every day he makes it a point to say hi to everybody and has just been a really good influence in the clubhouse. And you know, honestly, he's obviously got off to a good start, but just, you know, the couple walk-off hits he had, you know, overcoming adversity earlier in the game and battling back really is something that, you know, speaks a lot about him.
And now we hand things over to Rick Riz, his conversation with longtime trainer Rick Griffin.
Chance to sit down and visit with Mariners head trainer Rick Griffin, who's been here since 1983, 33 years with the organization. And Rick, I want to talk to you about, how did you get started in this business? You're one of the best in this business, trying to keep these guys healthy, the preventative side. How did you get started?
I always liked sports, and I was in high school. I liked physiology, and I kind of liked medicine. I went to college with the thought of possibly being a doctor, and then one day I saw this guy run on the field during a football game, and a guy had hurt his knee, and he started moving his knee around, and I asked around and found out he was an athletic trainer, and then I found him a couple days later, started talking to him and asked if I could come and watch what he did. And so he took me down to the training room, and I basically for about a month went in there and watched what he did. And then at the end of the school year, he asked me if I liked it. And I said, oh, I think this would be great. I'd love to learn how to do this. And he offered me a scholarship to be a student trainer. And so I did that for 3 years, and then eventually lucked out and got this Mariner job and have been here for quite a long time.
And what do you do like anybody else? You know, go to school, get that education, and send out resumes and tapes and try to get a big league job. But it first starts in the minor leagues, doesn't it?
Yeah. I was very lucky again. I was teaching high school in Eugene, Oregon. And I was lucky enough to get a job to be the trainer in rookie ball for the Cincinnati Reds. And so I taught high school for 4 years, and then the summer would roll around, and I worked with the rookie ball team there in Eugene. And then when I moved to Seattle, I missed baseball, and I actually called up Gary Nicholson, who was a trainer then, and asked him if I could come down and help him. And he said, yeah, come on down. And but I didn't ever do anything, because I learned that the players are extremely superstitious, and they don't want somebody they don't know doing anything or working with them. And so basically I just stood around and watched. But I kind of got an idea of what he did at a big league level, and that helped me. And then he told me he was going to retire at the end of the year, and I should apply. And I said, there's no way they're going to hire me. I'm too young. And he goes, hey, you never know. You should give it a try. So I did, and then I got lucky again and got hired. So.
Visiting with Rick Griffin here on Rick's Tips. And Rick, what's a typical day like for a trainer for a major league ball club?
Most of the guys, I think, in the big leagues, we work about 12 hours. We always joke around and say that we work half days, so it's a 12-hour day instead of an 8-hour shift. But we work for about 12 hours. We get here. We have paperwork to do, and we have to do some logging on the computer of some of the treatments and injuries that have happened over the course of the previous day. Then the players start to come in, and we do a lot of physical therapy type activities and stretching and taping. Then we get them ready for batting practice. Then during the game, we're doing a lot of rehab on the guys who are hurt or need work done during the course of the game. And then we watch the game, and then after the game, they come in and do more therapy, more treatments. Then we clean up the training room and go home, and then start over and do the same thing the next day.
What's the best advice you can give to a young man or a young lady who wants to get into this side of the business?
Well, I'm glad you said young lady, because there's a lot of opportunities for females in athletic training. There's actually more female athletic trainers than there are male athletic trainers. But baseball, there aren't quite as many. But we've actually had some in our system. And there are a few in the major leagues and the minor leagues that are doing work and doing things. My best advice is don't be afraid to take a chance and call people and ask people for the opportunity to either observe or job shadow, and just try to get as much experience when you're young as you can, because it helps you in two ways. Number one, you get an idea if that's really what you want to do. Yeah. And secondly, you find out if that's the path that you want to go down, and then find out if you want to do baseball. You may do a baseball thing and decide, hey, I'd rather work in a college and work football or track. There's a lot of different ways to go with athletic training.
Well, I'll tell you what, you do a great job. You are one of the best in the business. Mariners are very fortunate to have you as their head trainer, along with Robbie Nodine and the other guys in your staff. Rick, thanks a lot for the visit here on Rick's Tips.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Swung on and hit the right field, slicing away from McLemore into the corner. McLemore on the run and can't get it. It's a fair ball. Here comes Tito around third. He's going to score, heading for third. Flowers. The throw to the cutoff man, Ripken, is held on to. The Mariners lead it 2-1. Brad Pennington, the 6-5 left-hander's next pitch. A fastball belted deep to right. Back is McLemore to the track. Looks up. This will fly away over the Allentown scoreboard. So Junior has hit his second home run in his many nights.
High drive deep right center field. Junior on the run, at the track, at the wall. He leaps. And he caught the ball in deep right center field against the wall to rob Brady Anderson of extra bases. And the crowd here in Baltimore applauds that effort. What a play by Junior.
Brady Anderson back, looks up, it is gone. Home run, Bill Hasselman, his second home run of the year.
And Hasselman is hit. Hasselman's going out to the mound to get Mussina. Mussina drops his glove. Hasselman drops him down. And we've got our first melee of the year.
Drill deep right field on a fastball. Back to the wall goes Bernanski. Still going. That ball is out of here. Pete O'Brien drills a solo home run off Mike Fetters.
And now the southpaws stretch the 2-2 pitch on the way to Suero. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. There is strikeout number 100 on the year for Randy Johnson.
See you later!